Okay, if everybody could take their seats, please. I love it, the power of the microphone. Good morning, WCB. And good morning, ACB Radio. Is everybody having a good time?
Yes.
Yes, yes. So, Miss Cindy, are you in the room?
Yes.
Do you have announcements?
Of course.
Of course. She needs a microphone.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Are you having a good time?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I'm not believing this at all. Sorry, guys. All right. Are you having a good time?
Yeah.
All right. So, a couple of things. Of course, reminding people to pick up after their dogs. Should not have to, but am. If you have a puppy paw on your name tag, you can go to the guide dog meals. But if you don't, please do not. Because we have meal counts that we put in at the different meals. So if you go to the wrong meal, we're virtually paying for your meal twice. So please do not do that, okay? Again, I'm sorry for the mix-up yesterday in the lunch, but I hope everybody enjoyed their lunch that they did receive. And we hopefully have our numbers all set up and are good for today. So there's a few things happening today. You know, mostly we're going to be in here, right? Our general meal, our lunch and the banquet will be in Grand Three where breakfast was this morning. Guide dog lunch will be where guide dog breakfast was this morning in Cascade 5 and 6. And the scholarship reception will be in the hospitality room in Cascade 9 and 10 at 5 p.m. And beginning at 5 p.m., going to 7 p.m. sharp, will be the fundraiser. Now, some people got a VIP walkthrough and participation in the fundraiser last night, if they were a life member. I am going to send out this morning to the WCB list an email that contains all of the items. There are 44 items for silent auction and 10 for the raffle, multi-raffle. And none of you want 9. I'm just telling you. The box 9, nobody wants that one. Okay? Just saying. except for me. I want it. So you guys don't. Anyway, that one has, by the way, 2 Echo Dots and a Fire 7. So, tablet. So, So 5 to 7 is the fundraiser. Silent auction ends at 7, so you want to watch your silent auction items. The banquet room will open at 6 p.m. for pre-banquet hour. So, you can go in there and find your seat. And then something pretty important after the banquet, and the banquet will be pretty amazing, right? It always is. But afterwards, we're going to have karaoke and hospitality. Now, I want to say that this hotel has been amazing with providing the bar in hospitality. And you can leave your credit card up at the bar, and just like in any other bar, and they'll just run you your tab. And so you can use cash or credit at the bar in hospitality. But I worked with this hotel to stay open longer than Thursday night because they closed kind of early Thursday, right? Last night, hardly anybody came to hospitality. And I was like, what the heck? And I had to tell them it's okay to close, you know, because there was nobody there. So tonight, and it was unheard of for a Friday night. So tonight, I expect there to be a lot of people in hospitality, right? Okay. All right. So let's party tonight. Have a good time. And remember the theme for this weekend. Let's say it together on the count of three. One, two, three. WCB, we are community. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Cindy. Each year at convention, we are given the opportunity to hear about ACB, to be in the know concerning blindness issues on a national level. And this year, to present the report from ACB is our representative to the WCB convention. You heard from her yesterday, and now you're going to get to hear from her wearing a little bit different hat today. Gives me great pleasure to once again introduce Katie Frederick, who is a board of directors member from the ACB. Welcome, Katie.
Good morning, WCB.
Good morning.
It is so great to be here. I've had a wonderful weekend, and I look forward to today's events. And thank you for welcoming me into your community. It's really been great. So this morning, I want to talk a little bit about what the American Council of the Blind is doing at the national level. And I think, you know, this also filters down to some ways that you can get involved here at the state affiliate and local chapter levels. So I want to start out by talking about the national convention. Every year in July, ACB holds its annual conference and convention, and this past July was no exception. We had the convention in Rochester, New York, and it was a great success. At the conference and convention, we elected new officers to the organization this year. And so I know we have some first-timers in the room and maybe just some folks who aren't too familiar with what's going on within ACB. So this year our officers are our president, Dan Spoon, is from Orlando, Florida. Yes. So he is, all of these officers were elected to their first two-year term. So we have the first and second vice presidents were also elected, those being Mark Reichert from Arlington, Virginia, and Ray Campbell from the Chicago, Illinois area. Yes, and we have a new secretary. Some of you may know her. Her name is Denise Colley. Yes. So, and then we re-elected David Trott as the ACB treasurer, and he is on his second two-year term. So we elected officers at the convention, and we also worked on a lot of resolutions, and I know you have those here as well, I believe. So we had several resolutions this year dealing with, you know, issues of everything from transportation to making sure that, you know, the process for the census is more accessible, and a myriad of other topics that we felt were important to bring up during the conference. So we had several resolutions that are being worked on throughout the year, and those are really important. Advocacy is a huge part of ACB, and it's, you know, it really allows us to make a difference for people who are blind or visually impaired. So advocacy is a huge part of the work that we do, and it's something that's very important. Also, in prior to the convention, but not much before. ACB has a new staff member in the role of membership coordinator, Cindy Van Winkle. And so in her role, Cindy really, you know, provides an excellent opportunity for the connection, right? Because we are all part of the ACB community as, you know, members of WCB or whatever affiliate we may belong to. So we're all part of the great ACB community. And so in Cindy's role, she really has a chance to engage with members and reach out to members and connect them with their local chapter or special interest affiliate if they choose. I know that she's reached out to some of you here, so I know that more outreach will continue as she develops her role, and we will have some great opportunities to maintain and increase our membership within the organization. So that's a great opportunity. Communication-wise, ACB continues to utilize our social media channels to get the word out. We have, you know, several thousand likes on Facebook, and our Twitter account is active. We are also on the ACB radio side. Good morning, ACB Radio. So we are also working on that and getting some new content on ACB Radio. So because ACB Radio really is the voice of ACB, and so we want to highlight that as we go forward throughout the year. So that's something that we're going to be working on, is increasing that ACB-related content with some new programming coming out starting in the next 2020 year. We also have some email communication that we send out. How many of you are familiar with the Dots and Dashes publication? All right, a few of you, but we want to hear more applause. So Dots and Dashes is something that is sent out via email about every 2 to 3 weeks, and it really puts together kind of a highlight of different things that have happened within the organization. So it covers things from advocacy to news articles of interest to upcoming ACB events. So it's really an opportunity to stay connected with what's going on within ACB. And it has a really cool name, if I do say so myself. I think it's pretty neat. So we also have, how many of you listen to the ACB Advocacy Podcast? Uh-oh. We need to get some more clapping on that one, too. So the ACB Advocacy Podcast comes out once a week, and it's not just, I mean, advocacy is its focus, but it's not just about legislation. There are, you know, interviews with some folks about, you know, the autonomous vehicles and what's happening in that space, which is a huge topic of conversation right now. You know, many people are interested in what's going on in that space as well, and just keeping people updated on different advocacy issues that are impacting all of us who are blind or visually impaired. So the podcast is put together by our ACB advocacy team. So that is Clark Rockfall, who you heard from yesterday, and Claire Stanley. They work to put that podcast together, and they feature interviews with, you know, newly elected ACB officers and other members to really get the advocacy perspective. So the podcast is a really great way to find out about what's going on within the organization. Something else that we are working on is kind of looking at, from a national standpoint, how we work together. So ACB at the national level has a lot of committees, about 40 of them. And so what we did last weekend at our board meeting in Chicago was really look at how the different committees kind of roll up into different programs that we have. So, for example, the public awareness program encompasses things like the public relations committee and the ACB radio team and things like that. So we're really taking a look at how we as a national organization can really collaborate and work together with our with the staff that we have that do amazing work in our Alexandria and Minneapolis offices, and how we can work together from the staff level down to the committee level to really help get the work of ACB done that we need to do. We also are looking at ways that we can, you know, we're constantly looking at ways that we can communicate better with our members. And another way that we are doing that is through the ACB Braille Forum and the eForum. How many of you are familiar with those publications? Excellent. So one of the things that the eForum has started to do is they have the themed issues. So those are a really good way to learn about specific topics. Those themed issues have covered everything from employment to education to guide dog and dog-related issues, transportation. And we have more of those coming. So the ACB Board of Publications, which is responsible for a lot of ACB publication materials, has really worked to put together those themed issues of the eForum and the Braille Forum to really give members and others a chance to submit articles, but to also help encourage discussion and share information about topics that are relevant to people who are blind or have low vision. So the eForum and the Braille Forum, if you are not familiar with those, they're available in several different formats. You can get them via email or on cartridge or online through the ACB podcast feed as well. And so there really are a myriad of ways to access the information in those publications, and those are monthly publications. The Braille Forum and the eForum alternate months, so one month will be the Braille Forum, for example, and the next month will be followed by the eForum publication. So those are two of ACB's really flagship publications that, you know, we use to promote the work and issues that are affecting people who are involved with the organization as well. Does anyone have any questions about anything I've talked about so far, or want to ask any questions of me?
Here's a microphone.
How do you subscribe to the newsletter or email you said?
Yes, so you can subscribe to the forum online if you go to acb.org. You can also search for the ACB Braille Forum podcast, if you want to listen that way, through whatever, you know, podcatcher or podcasting app that you use. So those are a couple of ways that you can find the information. Any other questions?
Coming.
Hello, Katie. Is this on?
Yes.
Okay.
You're good.
This is Terry Atwater from Olympia, Washington. I know this isn't something you've talked about, but I think it's something that's of interest to everybody. Can you give us an update on accessible currency?
Ah, yes, accessible currency. That's a great question. And as we said last week during our board meeting, it's the case that keeps on going and going and going. So unfortunately, the accessible currency case really is still kind of at a standstill. It's going to be something that is going to keep taking time. And, you know, we are still working on it, but it is something that, you know, we're not letting go, but it's something that is going to be a focus for a significant amount of time, I think, with ACB going forward. So it's certainly something that is very much on the radar and very unacceptable that we don't have it, in my opinion. So it is something that we continue to advocate for and try to get that through the court and legislative process. But again, as our lovely government goes, sometimes it runs a little bit on its own timetable. So it is still something that ACB is very much working on, and it will continue to be something that we will focus on moving forward.
Katie?
Yes.
This is Melissa Hudson. I met you yesterday. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if you could please update us on upcoming national ACB convention.
Sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So that's a great point. So first of all, coming up in February, we have our ACB Leadership Seminar. We recently changed the name, so I almost called it Mid-Year Meeting. But the ACB Leadership Seminar is a chance to get together in Washington, D.C., and we have a day of seminar where we have updates from the various committees and programs that ACB is doing, and we hear from our president, and we have some leadership training that day. And then the next day is a legislative imperative day where we hear about very important issues. So, for example, this past year we talked about the Low Vision Devices Act, which Clark spoke about yesterday, and the Cogswell-Macy Act, which is still moving its way through Congress, which deals with students who are blind and deafblind getting counted so that they receive the proper education and materials that they need in their education. So, and the final day of the leadership seminar is when we all go to Capitol Hill and have the chance to meet with our senators and representatives, usually their staff, and discuss these issues to bring them to the attention of Congress and to make sure that they are aware of issues that really impact us as people who are blind or have low vision. So we will have that event again in February of this year. I do not have a calendar in front of me, but I believe the dates are February 21st through the 23rd or 24th. And so more information will be coming out about that soon. But if you have not attended that event, it's a really great way to not only learn more about ACB, but really see how advocacy works and the efforts that we go through to get this legislation passed eventually. And so it does take time, but if we don't advocate and we don't ask for what we need, things won't happen. So I encourage you to consider attending the leadership seminar in February, and to really have that chance to advocate and meet with your senators and representatives. It's a really great event. But our next national conference will be in Schaumburg, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. It's close to the O'Hare Airport. So that event is taking place July 5th through the 12th, I believe. And again, I didn't look this up, I apologize, but it's in early July, 4th through 10th, okay? And it is going to be at the Renaissance Hotel in Schaumburg, which is a very nice hotel and convention center. We were there last weekend for our fall board meeting and had a chance to walk around the hotel, maybe get lost a few times. Yes, but it's not as large. It's a little bit more straightforward, and there are right angles to get to places, and so it's not as confusing as some of our previous convention sites have been. But that is coming up in July, and again, that's the national convention is really a chance to meet others from around the country and around the world. ACB has many members who come from international other countries to join in our conference. And it's also a chance to enjoy some really great programming. A lot of our special interest affiliates and committees put on programming that deals with issues such as rehabilitation, employment, legislation, technology. Assistive technology is always a very popular topic that we cover at the conference. And at the national conference, members have a lot of great opportunities to interact with companies. So a lot of companies, Microsoft, JP Morgan Chase, to name a few, put on, you know, different workshops where they're asking for our feedback. So, you know, they want to improve their products, they want to see how they can make them better, and members and people who attend our national conference really have a chance to provide that feedback to companies. So it's a really great way to network and connect with others around the country and to address issues that are very important to people who are blind or low vision here in the United States.
Anna Zivarts, I am low vision and I work for Rooted in Rights, Disability Rights Washington. And I wanted to ask you about autonomous vehicles and what ACB is engaged in and working on that front, partially because we are involved with, here in Washington State, the we have a seat at the Governor's Executive Committee on Autonomous Vehicles. And so I also just want to open this up because I haven't had a lot of contact with folks at WCB to come and talk to me if you have concerns and want those expressed on this committee. But I'd like to hear, you know, nationally what's possible, because I think what we can do at the state level is going to be guided a lot by what happens nationally.
Thank you. That's a great question and a great comment. I'm pleased to hear that you are a member of this committee here in your state, and you're really able to have an impact at that level for people who are blind and low vision. So thank you for that. At the national level, ACB is working on several different committees and work groups, and we have meetings with car, you know, manufacturers about this issue. And we also, one of the issues that we took to Congress at our past February meeting, leadership seminar, there we go, was the Autonomous Vehicle Starter Act. And so really trying to bring this to Congress about the need for the accessibility of autonomous vehicles. And so it is something that is a major issue that we are really working on at the national level. It's really something in the forefront of our advocacy issues. Some of the advocacy podcasts recently have covered this issue. So if you have the ability to access the podcast, you may want to check back. I know there were some interviews with folks from GM, for example, and some other ones that really dealt with this issue of autonomous vehicles. It's something that I encourage everyone to, you know, whether you write or contact your congresspeople about or are involved at a state committee level, or, you know, there are things we can all do to make sure that as this technology develops, it is accessible from the get-go for people who are blind or low vision. So I encourage your continued advocacy work here at the state level. And if you do want to really have a discussion about this with ACB's advocacy team, I do encourage you to reach out to the national office. Clark and Claire are very personable and willing to talk to you about this issue and other advocacy issues. So you can reach them via the advocacy@acb.org email address or by calling the ACB National Office as well.
How you doing?
Other questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
How you doing here? Can you hear me?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. This is Eric from Seattle here. So we met before. Katie, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
So I want to know if you could speak to the current legislative challenges barring implementation of accessible currency, because this has actually been an issue for a number of years. And I have personally been involved in various study groups where they have actually tested the tactile identification. They had apparently the Mint had the ability to do this, but it was barred. So maybe you could talk to as to what the current challenges are as to why this isn't implemented.
Sure. So yes, it is. And so I think a lot of it has to do with the Department of the Treasury, saying, oh, do you really need this? And this is expensive and dragging their feet. So again, it is something that ACB continues to push for and fight for. I don't have specific updates concerning specific actions that are happening at this moment, but I do know that it is an issue that we know is ongoing. We continue to have discussions about it and continue to put this issue in front of the courts and Congress and Treasury, because it is an issue that is frankly, again, not acceptable and something that we need. So it is an issue that we are continuing to work on. It's just going to be one of those issues that we will be working on for some time yet to come.
Oh, hi, Katie. I'm Haley Edick. I think I knew you many years ago. But I was wondering, this may be opening a can of worms, but I was wondering if ACB has any interaction with the CDC to ensure that Braille materials are available to health centers that may need to give it to people who do not have access to a computer regarding the opioid crisis and other pertinent information. I have tried to contact the CDC to see if they even produce this stuff, and it kind of took me in a loop. And I've talked to someone on the phone or by email, and all they did was send me the same website I went to.
Thank you. That is a great question, and I I'm not aware of work going on with the CDC, but I think that is certainly something that we will take back to ACB and see if we can't look into that for you and make sure that materials that you need or want are presented in an accessible format. So we will take that back and bring that up with the advocacy team and see if there is anything being done or if we can get a contact. I know that, again, access to healthcare and things is very important, and it's work that we're constantly looking at to make our healthcare services more accessible to people who are blind or low vision. For those who don't know, kind of on that topic, Walmart and Envision America have a partnership now. So when you go to any Walmart or Sam's Club pharmacy, you can get accessible prescription labels. So that's amazing. And we know that we need to continue to advocate in that space to allow for more accessible prescription labels. So that's something that we're continuing to do, but we are developing these partnerships to help increase access to this. Yes, and there's an app as well.
And that will need to be our last question.
Okay.
Hello. Hi, it's Peg Mercer. I'm actually from Vancouver, BC, Canada.
Welcome.
Anyway, regarding...
Make it quick, because...
Regarding the currency, I just wondered, with the app, the former Money Reader app has now been replaced, apparently, by Cash Reader, which I downloaded, but it is only free for the first two denominations of the currency.
Oh, gosh. So
I wonder if there's any way, I'm not sure where you would advocate for it to be a totally free app.
So there is another option available called Seeing AI. That's Seeing AI, and that's made by Microsoft. And that app is free, and it allows you to identify currency from the U.S. and other countries, I believe. And it also offers many other features, such as a barcode reader and a text-to-speech, yes, it can recognize text and documents. So it's a great app, and I will end there so that we can get back on schedule. But thank you so much, everyone, for having me.
Whoa. Okay, if... Crystal Husted and Roberto Cordero could be making their way up here, please, as I speak. I just want to say three quick things before we move on to our next panel. One, back to Eric's question about accessible currency. Our attorney, Jeff Levidke, is once again filing another appeal
We keep appealing this decision because Department of Treasury and the Bureau of Engraving, Printing and Engraving just are dragging their feet and coming up with all kinds of excuses why they can't do it. Well, it's going to cost too much. It's going to be too difficult to implement. And now they've moved the deadline date up to 2026. So, and every year they come to our convention and they take you through the same old surveys and ask the same old questions. And we are very frustrated, to say the least. Haley, your question is interesting, and what I would say to that is it probably is going to take the same kind of action that it took with the American Cancer Society. Somebody has to be willing to take it on and work probably with ACB's advocacy committee and possibly Lainey Feingold and Linda Dardarian in structured negotiation if materials aren't being made available that are really important for us to have on this topic. Oh, well, I'll just let them know. And Peg, your question, you know, what it's going to take is contacting the developer of the app and saying we need, you know, yeah, he is a private developer and he doesn't have to do it, but what she said is there is an app called iNote, which is their solution right now that you can get that is a free app. I can't get Seeing AI to work at all. I hate that app. Good, I hate that app. All right. Our next panel is, agenda item is a favorite every year at our convention, and it is our employment panel. This year, it's the journey to the job, and we are going to have three panelists who are blind who are going to share their journey to employment. So to facilitate this panel and introduce her panelists, I give you Ms. Cindy Van Winkle.
There's the microphone. Do we have our guest on the phone?
No, we don't.
Okay. Uh-oh. All right. So I did send him the information, and I've got a plan to punt, so if he doesn't show up. So, Deb, would you keep me posted on that?
I will.
Thank you so much. So I am... Do you have your program up here? Mm-hmm.
Do we have a program? Do we have a program?
No, I just have a note taken. I was counting on that. Okay. Wow. I didn't bring my Braille program. I thought somebody would have it up here, and there's not one.
Okay, what do you need?
Could we do a door prize? I want to get... You guys don't mind, do you? Let's do a door prize. Shannon, are you in the room?
Yes, ma'am.
I think everybody wants a door prize, don't you guys? Yeah. See, I know how to fix this.
Yes.
I got it.
Okay. Where's the microphone?
Good morning, WCB.
Morning.
Are we having fun today?
Yeah.
Would we like to get, would somebody like to have even more fun by eating a whole bunch of sugar?
I don't think this girl needs sugar.
No. So, we have this morning a box of dark walnut chocolate See's candy bar from the Tri-Cities. And I'm going to give away this handmade pen, or stylus pen that Dan Lovell has made. So, and you got to be present to win. So, all right. It's Mark Adrian in the room. All right.
All right. Okay, I'm ready now, so hang tight there, Shannon. You can get ready for after this panel, okay?
Okay.
Okay, thank you. All right, so, you know, this year I called this Journey to the Job, because really getting a job for anyone is a journey, right? Especially when you get to the job that it's the job you really wanted. So someday I'm going to be on this panel to talk about my job that I'm in right now, I think, yeah. But today, I have three people that are going to share their journey to their job. And the first person that I'm going to invite up is Roberto Cordero. Roberto is assistive technology. Is it specialist, Roberto? Okay, assistive technology specialist. Roberto, if you'd come over towards me over this way, I'll have you speak at the podium, okay? And he works for Department of Services for the Blind. Typically, getting a job is not just the application interview and now you've got the job, right? There's all kinds of other things involved, and it has to do with our home life. It has to do with our education. It has to do with when we lost our vision, what skills that we already know or need to know. There's just so many aspects of it. Roberto is going to share his journey. So please help me. And this is his first convention. Yeah. But help. And I know you guys, I hope, are making him feel very welcome. And here's Roberto Cordero. Okay.
Roberto, it's right where you at, man.
Okay, I'm gonna just show you. Right, there you go. And the microphone's kind of sticking out, so find it.
Good morning, WCB.
Good morning.
Well, yeah. Yeah, buenos dias. I hope everybody's having a great time. This has been my first convention, and so far I really liked it. So, yeah, awesome to be back here today. A journey to employment. Let's see, how can I make this quick, because I don't want to monopolize the entire panel. But the thing is, yes, I've been legally blind since birth, born with albinism, and when I was born, I was the only visually impaired kid my mom had. I had an older brother, but he was fully sighted. Then a few years later, I had a younger sister who was also visually impaired, but I got to be like the guinea pig, like the one who had to test what worked and what not. Interesting, as my mom was back then not, she wasn't like an expert in visual disabilities, and she was looking for information. She took me, I think, to 8 ophthalmologists to get opinions on whether I will be able to see better or not. Eventually, she resigned when one doctor told her it was not going to happen. Now I'm kind of worried and working hard to not die in what's left of this year, because when the ophthalmologist told my mom that I was never going to see 2020, it didn't hit me that maybe I might die in what's left of 2019. So no, I'm working hard to prove it. I'm working hard to prove him wrong. I am going to see 2020. But yes, other than that, it was then a matter of trying out things. I was going to attend a school for the blind in Puerto Rico, which is where I'm originally from. But this ophthalmologist, even though he told her I was not going to see 2020, he told my mom, don't... Don't limit his potential. Don't close doors for him. Try regular school first. And so she did. As part of that, I attended kindergarten, which back in the 1800s when I was a kid, it was optional back there in Puerto Rico. Kindergarten was optional. Now it's mandatory. But I was the first person in my family who attended kindergarten to see if I could handle the regular school. I did pretty well and continued the regular school. I got a TVI who came twice a week at first, and then later grades it was once a week, but to help me get accessible school materials. I learned Braille and other things. By the time my sister, who was also legally blind when she had to go to school, my mom had no worries. She knew if I could do it, she could do it too, and she did probably maybe even better than me. Anyway, fast forward into college, and I got exposed to technologies and computers for the first time because a computer in the 80s was a huge luxury that my family couldn't afford. And let's not talk about an accessible computer back then. So it wasn't until I got to college that I got exposed to technology. And I liked it so much. I learned everything I could and started teaching new students who came to the campus, visually impaired students and blind, and how to use the computers. I kind of liked it so much that I got sidetracked from my English teaching degree and ended up working for an IT business as a trainer. That worked out fine. And in one of the conventions, I think it was for blinded veterans in Puerto Rico, I met Eric Demery, who back then was the vice president of software development in Freedom Scientific. And we kind of made a good networking connection. He asked me to join the beta list, which is the list of users who get to try the new features of JAWS and back then Magic and OpenBook before they release to the public and report issues. Apparently they liked my bug reports so much that they offered me a job. And in 2002, summer of 2002, I moved to St. Petersburg, Florida, and worked for Freedom Scientific there for 2 years. I loved my job, but that was the only thing I liked about living there.
Yeah.
So eventually, I was open with them about the situation and eventually moved back to Puerto Rico, but kept working for them remotely for 8 more years. So I worked 10 years for Freedom Scientific. Then stuff happens. The company had to do some layoffs, and I was let go. But I was kind of already with my hands busy because my mom had had two strokes back then. So I was taking care of her. After she had her third stroke, things really wound down, and then she passed away. And then I was left with a decision to make. One of the things I have valued the most all of my life is independence. Probably because I was the middle child, and while my mom did not neglect me at all, yeah, my siblings did get more attention. My brother was the oldest, the man of the house, quote. My sister was the baby, the girl of the house. So I kind of learned to do my own thing and to be independent. And when my mom passed away, I had already lost my siblings, my brother to heart failure, my sister to leukemia. So I was all alone and faced with a decision. What am I going to do to keep living a full independent life? In Puerto Rico, if you cannot drive a car, you're worthless. You are stuck at the mercy of depending on someone else's charity, and that's, to me, that's not a good way to live. So I started 5 months after dealing with my mom's passing. I was sending out emails to different agencies for the blind in different states where I would consider moving to and see what my options would be there. And it was Seattle, the first one to reply, DSB. So I got some information and pretty much did a whole life reboot. I came to Seattle middle of September 2015, not knowing anybody. I was homeless for 2.5 months. I have to work through all that, but did get a job at the Lighthouse for the Blind. Not the best job in the world, but it pays the bill, and it was an honest job, and I treated it with as much responsibility as it is, as if it was the position of the CEO for Microsoft. So, working at the Lighthouse, I had some chance to work in some testing contracts, accessibility testing contracts for Microsoft. And one of the guys I met working there ended up getting a position for AT specialist in DSB. It was cool. I liked the guy a lot, but I knew in my mind he wasn't really fit for the position because he was a software engineer. He lives and breathes code. So I knew a customer-facing position like that was not going to make him happy, but I wasn't going to say anything. Awesome. I know how hard it is to find a job, so great to see another blind person getting a job. But eventually he didn't like it and found a job somewhere else, so a position became open. I applied, got interviewed for it, and both the traditional job interview as well as a practical assessment, and I guess DSB liked what they saw. Quickly they called me back. We want to offer you this position, and I've been working, serving in the assistive technology department of DSB in Seattle for 1.25 years now.
So thank you, Roberto. All right. Oops. Oh, my goodness. This thing is like right. I'm going to scoot this back a little bit because it's like really right in your face when you come to the podium. All right. Thank you so much, Roberto. So challenges, you know, what I heard in Roberto's presentation is that, you know, family, right, in our personal life can really take us on different journeys. And he's resilient. And he knew that he wanted to be independent. And he was willing to fight for that and move to, you know, to the United States to be able to get employment. So anyway, thank you so much, Roberto, for being so open with us. Next, I would like to invite Crystal Husted to the podium. Crystal is a loan program assistant, sorry, for the Northwest Access Fund. Many of us know Northwest Access Fund very well because they manage our WCB equipment loan. But anyway, Crystal is going to share with us her journey, and this is also her first convention. All right, right here, Crystal. Right there. You can adjust that microphone as you need it.
Hi, everyone. I'm really excited to be here and tell you a little bit about my journey. And to start off with, I have Usher syndrome. So many of you know that that combines hearing loss with retinitis pigmentosa. Ooh, I'm going to kiss that microphone. And so for me, that means from birth, I had a moderate to severe bilateral hearing loss. And so I've worn hearing aids my whole life. And so I was very used to being a little bit different. I was teased a little bit by the mean girls in junior high school, you know, the ones that walk behind you and say, huh, what, huh? So, but you know what, that sort of thing I think is character building, and I think it gives us an empathy for how it feels to be treated like that. And so I never forgot that. I still carry that with me when I'm interacting with people, because we all have our different experiences and we all need to treat each other with respect. So being kind of a bit of an outsider, it was natural for me in high school to become part of the theater group. So I got to hang out with all the fun misfits who enjoyed being misfits together. And I also came out of my shell. Theater allowed someone who can be really kind of shy when I first meet people to get up on stage and do outrageous things. And if you find me in hospitality and I've had a couple of drinks, I can tell you about some of the outrageous things I did in theater. But I loved it so much that when I went to college, I decided to get a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree because I wanted to be an actor. And that was fun. College was a blast. I had a great time. Unfortunately, it was after college that I realized I don't have that fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants, free-spirit personality, which I think works best if you want to be a professional actor. I like more stability in my life, and so I started working at different office jobs. And my first 2 years after college, I also moved 6 times. So I was literally traveling around trying to kind of find my path, find my place. And eventually I ended up in Utah because most of my family had moved there by then. And I found a job with a company that builds and repairs a device that monitors blood during dialysis. And I was their primary phone answering person, providing tech support and customer service. And, you know, it wasn't really my dream job, but I've always believed in doing my work to the best of my ability and being conscientious, being aware of how my words and actions impact the people I work with, as well as the people I interact with. So I developed that skill very well when we would get grouchy customers calling in. And so I had been working there for a few years when about 10 years ago, I started noticing my eyesight, which had never been great. I had eye surgery when I was 2.5 because my center of vision was off to one side. And so I had to have my eyes adjusted so I could look straight ahead instead of out of the corner of my eye, flirtatiously, as my parents used to say when I was a toddler, trying to actually see people and turn my head all the way over. But in my mid-30s, my night vision had grown even worse. I was sort of seeing flashing lights, and my peripheral vision was getting worse. And I started becoming more and more nervous as I drove on the interstate, and I didn't, you know, I would just grit my teeth and do it because I am not going to let fear keep me from doing what I need to be independent. Well, fortunately, around that time, I have when you can't see the microphone, you become very intimate with it sometimes. fortunately, around that time, 2 of my younger siblings, who also wore hearing aids, were diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa. And when I heard the symptoms that were part of that diagnosis, I realized, oh, that's what's going on. It's not just in my mind. There really is something. So I went in, and I was officially diagnosed and advised to not drive on the interstate anymore. So that was good. My commute went from 30 minutes each way to 1 hour each way. But that just allowed me to develop an even deeper love of audiobooks. So, yeah. And let me tell you, audiobooks are the best way to get through those big, scary books. That's how I read War and Peace and Moby Dick. So while I was doing that commute, one day it was raining and it was November, so it was getting dark very early, and I became more and more panicked because I am much more nervous about driving in the dark than I was about driving on the interstate. So I thought, okay, I just need to get home. I got back on the interstate. I am driving quickly, the interstate speed, it's raining, you know, all the brake lights are reflecting. And then all of a sudden my exit was there, and I had forgotten how much the traffic backs up at that exit during rush hour. So the next thing I knew, there was a car in front of me not moving. I slammed on my brakes and rear-ended them. My airbag did not deploy, so I ended up with a donut-sized bump on my forehead. I also managed, because of that, I had a couple of amazing black eyes for our big family picture 2 days later. Thank goodness for digital photograph correction. Well, because of that accident, my dad and my brother both urged me to talk to my work about letting me work from home. And my first thought was, they'll never do that. I'm the primary phone answering person. That's not going to work, but I figured it wouldn't hurt to try. So I wrote a very professional letter. My retinal specialist wrote a letter supporting me. And my company agreed to let me work from home 2 days a week. And so that meant their IT guy had to come the 23 miles to my condo and set up a work-at-home station so that I could answer our company's phones from 23 miles away. And so that was amazing. That took so much stress off, just even just having 2 days of not having to drive that 2 hours total each day. And I learned that was kind of my first stab at self-advocacy. And I learned that we are our best advocates. We are the only ones who know what we need and who can best elucidate that to others. And and if you don't ask for what you need, if you don't ask for help, people can't read your mind, so you won't get that help. So about a year after I started working 2 days a week from home, the company closed down our location. And to me, this was actually really good news because Utah is a very sunny place, and my eyes are so light sensitive. I hated being out in that glaring sunlight all the time. And I had, ever since I was in college and fell in love with Nirvana, had dreamed of living in Seattle. So my parents had recently moved up to Sequim, Washington, out on the peninsula. And so with my job ending, they gave me a severance package, and I was able to afford to move up to Washington. And my brother, who also has Usher syndrome, moved up with me. And our first task in Washington was to go to the DMV and get our Washington driver's licenses. Yeah, I think you probably know where this is going. So I went to do the vision portion, and the woman giving the test looked oddly at me and said, "Do you realize you got every single letter wrong?" No, I had not realized that. And that made it clear to me that my driving days were over. And I'm glad. Yes. No, I just... Yes, you're all safer now.
Yeah.
I just could never have handled the thought of possibly hurting or worse yet, killing someone because I really could not see very well what I was doing behind the wheel of this extremely dangerous vehicle. So that was an easy choice to make. The repercussions were not because, as many of you know, when you give up driving, it can feel like you're losing your independence. And where my parents live does not have good public transportation. So for about a year, I was just in a depression And all I wanted to do was binge watch Netflix and play solitaire on my computer while I could still see it. But fortunately, my brother had gone through his own RP diagnosis, induced depression, a couple years earlier, gotten it out of his system, and was ready to find out what we could do in Washington as blind people. And he discovered the Department of Services for the Blind. And he signed up with them. And he's 8 years younger than I am. There was no way I was going to let my little brother show me up. So I went ahead, I signed up with DSB, and we both had the same voc rehab DSB counselor, Harry Whiting. And Harry and DSB gave us so much support, but the most valuable thing that they did was to eventually get us to the Orientation and Training Center here in Seattle. And the OTC absolutely gave me my life back. When I first went there, I thought I didn't belong. I thought, I'm not blind enough to be here. Because when you're blind, all you see is pitch black. But all, you know, I could still see, so I wasn't really blind. But being at the OTC, I realized that being blind is so diverse, that we all have different experiences, but yet we are all still part of this community, which is amazing. And I met so many amazing people. I met two of my roommates are now my best friends. And I met the love of my life. and I learned the skills that I needed to be independent again and to get back into the workforce. I learned how to use a white cane. My constant companion, Citizen Kane. And, oh my goodness, the last time I tried walking without my cane, I ran full force into a solid wooden bench, which left a dent in my shin for months. So I learned the lesson the hard way. I go everywhere with my cane now. I don't always use it as well as I should, but it's always a learning experience. The other really important skill for my job was computers. And so I use Zoom text. And, yeah, that allowed me to use my skill with computers even as my eyesight deteriorates. And so I'm extremely grateful for that skill as well. And it was both of these skills that were especially invaluable as I started the job search after OTC. And I had had quite a few interviews, but finally, my friend Donna Lawrence, who teaches home ec at the OTC, sent me a job link. It was for this nonprofit called the Northwest Access Fund. And I went to the interview and met some of the nicest people you could ever hope to meet. I mean, these are do-gooders in the best sense of the word. These are people who care about the disabled community, no matter what your disability is, no matter what your functional limitations are, and they provide a 5% interest loan. But if you're a WCB member, we have a 0% interest loan, which can be used to purchase assistive technology. And we also offer free financial coaching. So if you want to hear about any more about any of that, find me. I'll be here the rest of today. So that's my commercial. And they paid for me to be here, so I had to say that. No. No, I'm grateful to be at the Northwest Access Fund. And it, to me, it's a chance to give back after I've received so much. So in conclusion, you know, I like that the theme for this weekend is about community, because we are all part of the community. Like I just said, we have our diverse experiences, but we can still support each other. And as you're job searching, just remember that. Remember that all of us have our different path, but we are here to support you. And I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Crystal. I'm really grateful that the DMV here in Washington was so honest with you. we still don't have anybody on the phone? Okay, thank you. So next, I would like to introduce to you Katie Frederick. And Katie is going to share, as long as she's here, she is a program administrator for her rehab agency in Ohio. She will tell you what the name of that is, because she said it, and I was like, whew, it's gone. But anyway, she's going to share her journey to her job. So help me welcome again back to the podium, Katie.
I'm back. All right, so now to talk about employment, the rest of the story. So for me, I went to college. I've been blind since birth, but I went to public school for my K through 12 education. So I was very blessed in that regard that I had great TVIs and advocates to allow me to attend public school. After I graduated from high school, I attended college in Ohio and received a degree in communications. And I thought when I initially went to college and wanted to get my degree in communications, I thought, okay, I want to work on the radio. When I was younger, I did the whole on cassette tape of I'm a DJ and I'm hosting a radio station, and I forget what I called it, but I really took it seriously. So I had, you know, my radio DJ gig going on. But when I got to college, I attended one of my courses. They had someone come in from the radio industry who was very honest with us and said, radio is a good career, but it's changing. And at the time, in the early 2000s, it was changing drastically. The thing called local radio was going away. So he basically said, you know, radio is a good career, but you may only be working part-time and you may only be earning, you know, not a lot of money. So I thought, well, maybe let's reconsider that radio DJ. So I stuck with my communications degree because I was almost finished at that point. But I thought, okay, maybe I'll do something in the public relations space. So I started looking at jobs and became a little bit discouraged at that time because a lot of them wanted you to be good with visual things. And, well, you don't want this totally blind person dealing with pictures or other visual art. For me at the time, I found that a little bit intimidating. So I was in my senior year of college and was just kind of like, well, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm sure I'll find something, right? I'll figure it out. So I went through a program at my school called the Workforce Recruitment Program for People with Disabilities. And this is a program that was offered through the Department of Labor. And it was, the object of it was to employ people with disabilities in federal government jobs. And so through this program, I accepted an internship position in Columbus. So I moved to Columbus in the summer of 2007 after graduating from college. Didn't know anyone, but took the chance and moved to Columbus, and I've been there 13 years now. So it proved to work out well for me. But I moved there and worked at the internship with the Department of Defense, the Defense Logistics Agency, for 3 months. And at the end of that time, they said, well, we'd love to hire you. We really would, but you don't have a business degree, and we need someone with a business degree. So, bummer. That was my loss. After that internship ended, I was unemployed for 9 months. And let me tell you, those were some 9 months that really tested my confidence, my self-esteem, what was I going to do? I was, you know, entering a point where I was going to have to maybe make some choices. You know, can I afford to stay in Columbus? Would I have to move back home with my parents for some time? But I knew if I did that, that would really limit my access to transportation and take away my independence. And gosh darn it, I'm an independent person. So I did not want to do that if I didn't have to. So I went through some interviews and had that experience of, had some great experiences, but also had some experiences of walking into the room and thinking by the non-visual cues that I was receiving that, oh, this job is not going to happen for me. This person is not sure how to communicate with me, and this is just a very awkward situation. But I did the interview routine for a while, and then in the spring of 2008, I was contacted by a federal agency, also through the Department of Defense, called the Defense Finance and Accounting Service, or DFAS, and they offered me a position. So I was offered the position of accounting technician, and I thought, oh, great, this is awesome, a federal job, this is going to be great, it'll be an awesome experience. And I was not a fan of the job. I took the job. I was grateful to have it. Even though I did not particularly like the work, I did a lot of data entry and things that I just did not enjoy personally. That job taught me so much. It taught me the fact that, hey, in life you're going to have jobs you don't like. You're going to have to do work you don't always want to do. But you're also going to have to advocate. Because once you get out of college, not everyone uses Microsoft Office products. And so you have to deal with systems that use DOS, even, of all things, where you had to, yes. So I got to work, and they said, you're going to enter this string of commands. And I thought, really? This is fascinating. Thank God for my Braille display, because the system did not interface well with JAWS, but thanks to Braille, I was able to do the job. Yes, yay for Braille. So I did that job for 5.5 years, and then an opening came up for the executive director position of our American Council of the Blind of Ohio affiliate. And so I decided to, it was time for a change. So I decided to apply for that position, and I received the job. So I was the executive director for ACB Ohio, as we call it, for about 4 years. And that job also taught me things, a lot of things. It was a great experience to work for that organization and to really benefit the members of my affiliate. That was an amazing opportunity. But I was working away and working away, and I got a call from a friend who happens to work at The Ohio State University. And he called me up and said, hey, there's a position opening here, and I think you should really apply and consider joining our team. And that position was for a digital accessibility specialist. So I took on that role at Ohio State and got to evaluate a lot of websites and a lot of applications and write a lot of reports saying you need to fix a lot of issues. but again, that job taught me a lot of things about accessibility and communicating and just how we can work with people to help make applications and websites more accessible. And those are skills that I carry with me today. I was working away at OSU, enjoying that job and not even looking to anything else. And I got a call one day from my current boss who called me out of the blue and said, you want to come work for me? And I said, what? I was not even looking for a job, but she called me and said, yes, we'd love to have you on our team here at Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities, which is our Ohio Voc Rehabilitation Agency. And I said, well, let's talk. And she sent me some information, and I said, okay, I'll come join your team. So a little over a year ago, I accepted the position of program administrator for our Bureau of Services for the Visually Impaired. And it's a job that brings a lot of variety to me. Every day I'm doing some different work, managing different projects and programs that we offer, but also still able to focus on, helping other coworkers and employees learn about accessibility and increasing accessibility to our services and our materials. So I'm so grateful for the experiences that I've had, the jobs that I've had, even the time I was unemployed. Again, that taught me a lot about myself and how to cope with that. So that is that's my employment journey.
Okay. We have maybe time for one question. Maybe two. We'll see how quickly people can ask it and answer it. So, anybody have a question? And do we have somebody to run a mic?
Raise your hand.
Bruce has got the mic.
Bruce has a mic.
I have a mic. Coming down. Excuse me.
First of all, weren't they wonderful?
Yeah. Hi, this is Dan. I have one question, as a combination of two and one. During the interview process, how did, like, a lot of times you can tell in a person's voice, it's like, thank you for showing up, but, you know.
Is this for Katie, or is this for somebody else?
Or just the entire panel.
Whoever wants to answer it.
And then the other question is, I don't know your ages or anything, but, like, I know one person I had is, like, if it wasn't the vision issue, then it was, I know how old I am, so I can imagine how old you are. So how do I was wondering if you dealt with anything like that and how you dealt with it.
Okay. So does anybody want to take the question about interview, the interview process? Katie's going to. And then do any of you want to talk about age discrimination if you felt that? I don't know if any of them are old enough to feel that. Okay, Roberto said he would. So, all right, here's Katie.
Whoops. So I think for me, again, that interview process of, oh, this is awkward, this person is not engaged. You know, I just tried to go in and present myself, present my skills, and, you know, keep a smile, keep a positive attitude, and really just show that I could do the job, just put my best foot forward. And I hoped that by my going to the interview and going through that process, even though that person was maybe a little unsure how to handle communicating with a person who's blind, I hope that through my actions, they were able to learn and be educated, because I think at the end of the day, that's what's important. So I hope that my interview made some sort of an impact.
All right.
Hello again. To answer the question about age discrimination, since I have worked in the technology field my entire life, I was and I am fully aware of the age discrimination issue. I am 46 years old now, and I guess once I was let go of Freedom Scientific, which wasn't an age issue, was just them shifting priorities of what software they were going to support, but then I had to look for another job and start going to interviews with other tech companies for testing positions, and kept being turned down. Even the ones where I got the interviews, I would go with my assistive equipment and ready to go. And when I didn't get called back, yes, it was always present, the fact that they were working and looking to work with much younger engineers. But you can't let that stop you. You have to keep trying. You have to keep showing your best foot forward, because age is something you cannot control, no matter what the TV commercials for wrinkle creams say. So, it's something that you will carry with you, and you have to do your very best.
That's great. Oh, my gosh. And you know what? You're never too old to get a job, because I was just before my 57th birthday, I got my current job. So, right? Some of us just bring more experience into the job, right? Okay. We'll take one more question.
Hi. My name is Melinda, and this is my first W.
She's on it. Oh. Eat it.
Oh, my first WCB convention, and thank you. I just wanted to know, like, in anybody in your jobs, if you deal with sighted people, and how they treat you, and how they accept you or not accept you.
So do any of you, one person, want to touch on how their sighted peers treat them? Yes. Crystal would like to. All right. So come toward me, Crystal.
So all of my coworkers are sighted, and we actually have a very small group. I only work with 6 other people, a nice little cozy nonprofit. And I think I am a little spoiled because they deal with helping people with all sorts of disabilities. And yet, because I am partially sighted, I think they assume I can see more than I really can sometimes. So I have found that I need to speak up and let them know if I can or cannot see things. And also, they provided equipment for me, a really big monitor, and DSB provided a CCTV. So, you know, when you're working in an environment, you just need to make sure that you have the equipment and accommodations that you need. And some companies are going to be really woke. Look how hip I am. They will be aware of offering accommodation. But in other situations, and even with the more progressive work environments, you're still going to have to be strong enough to speak up, probably more than I do sometimes. My boyfriend will definitely support that I will complain to him about things sometimes, and he'll say, well, you need to tell your coworkers that. So I'm just being honest that sometimes I talk the talk more than I walk the walk. And then when I do that, I walk the walk right into a big, sharp object that someone left in my path because I didn't let them know I couldn't see it. So, just keep advocating.
All right, we're going to end there, but can you guys help me thank these 3 again? And we're just a couple minutes into your break. We're going to do 1 door prize, and then you'll have a break until 10:25. Okay? So, Shannon,
yes,
let's do it quickly, because you're taking their break. Somebody's got to go, you know, to the little boys' or girls' room.
All right, so we're going to do another See's Candy bar from the Tri-Cities. And I have another, I'm not sure what this is that Dan gave us. It's not a pen. It looks like kind of a bottle that you might put something in.
Oh, I want that. That is mine. That's my perfume bottle.
Yes, yes. So let's see if I am going to draw Cindy Van Winkle.
I hope so.
Going to draw Cindy Van Winkle.
Yeah.
I'm going to draw
my best friend, maybe.
Is your best friend Steve Pierce?
He could be if he's here.
All right.
Was he here? He is my best friend.
He is your best friend.
All right, you guys, you're on break until 10:25.